For those of you who think you know what's going on, it's nice to be young and fresh and be opinionated and all that, but certainly none of us know the truth. This is the grand mother load of conspiracy. In fact, everybody on the planet probably has their own theory as to what actually happened to JFK. As you can see here, he's quite obviously being kidnapped by something very, very strange that appears in the car on Zapruder, frame number 220 odd. In fact, it just appears in the car. Make of it what you will, I say alien kidnapping.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
Those women actually had sex with extraterrestrials.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links, or to try our new current event conspiracy theory generator. Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Atención, 6, 7, 3, 7, 0. Atención, 6, 7, 3.
7. Interpretations of secret messages encrypted backwards within human speech have withstood the test of time. I also have great confidence in the way that members of the public can reach their own conclusions regarding the relative merits of encrypted messages within President Kennedy's newly released secret tapes describing proof that aliens landed here.
In our obsession with antagonisms of the moment, we often forget how much unites all the members of humanity. Perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
If you saw that there were aliens there, would you tell us?
Yeah.
You would.
So I think, look, what do we know? We know now we live in an ever-expanding universe. We know that there are billions of stars and planets literally out there, and the universe is getting bigger. We know from our fancy telescopes that just in the last 2 years, more than 20 planets have been identified outside our solar system that seem to be far enough away from their suns and dense enough that they might be able to support some form of life. So it makes it increasingly less likely that we're alone.
Oh, you're trying to give me a hint that there are aliens.
No, I'm trying to tell you I don't know.
Oh.
But if we were visited someday, I wouldn't be surprised. I just hope that it's not like Independence Day.
Yeah, right.
Movie, that it's a conflict.
Well, now we have friendly
maybe
aliens.
The only way to unite this incredibly divided world of ours. They're out there. We better think of how all the differences among people on Earth would seem small if we felt threatened by a space invader.
So this is something I feel like, if I was the president, and it's unlikely that that is ever going to happen.
You never know.
If I was the president.
It was unlikely that I was going to be president.
The moment I was inaugurated, my hand would still be hot from touching the Bible, and I would immediately race to wherever they have the files about Area 51 and the UFOs, and I'd go through everything to find out what happened.
Right.
Did you do that?
That's why you will not be president. that's the first thing that you would do.
the
aliens won't let it happen. You reveal all their secrets. They exercise strict control over us.
Now, you know, there are a lot of people that are going to examine your facial expressions here, every twitch, everything, and say, and of course, so did you look? Did you see? Did you explore?
I can't reveal anything.
Oh, really? Because President Clinton said he did go right in, and he did check, and there was nothing.
Well, you know, that's what we're instructed to say.
The ancient alien theory answers that exact question, and the answer is yes.
Part three. UFOs.
UFOs.
Do you believe in UFOs?
Who wants to go first?
I have a funny story I'd like to tell.
Yes, please.
Last year at Porkfest, Brian and I were standing by the fire. And actually, I think you might have even been there, Brett, that night. Although you weren't there like at that moment, but you might have seen this too.
Yeah.
Everybody was intoxicated except for us pretty much because we don't do drugs or drink.
Right.
And we're just sober there. But everyone else is pretty much high out of their gourd. And someone like points up at the sky and goes, "What's that? It's a UFO." So we look up and there's these lights in the sky, these orange lights, and they're floating and they're like drifting over Porkfest. And there's a bunch of them. There's like 10 or there's like a dozen of these orange lights in the sky.
Wow.
And Brian's like, "What is that?" Like, we didn't know what it was. And I looked at it and I'm like, "Yeah, I see those, but I'm not sure what they are either. It doesn't look like a plane. It's going too slow and it's too low and it's too orange. And it doesn't look like a star because it's moving. And doesn't look like this. Doesn't look like..." We were like ruling things out. And then like one of them fell down out of the sky. And it also dimmed at the same time.
This all happened, yes. you're looking at me.
and like for a minute, we looked at each other and we're like, "Oh my God, there's UFOs at Porkfest."
Well, I don't know that I said that.
They were unidentified.
They were unidentified.
Yeah. Flying.
Well, like there was a moment where we looked at each other and we really didn't know what they were.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
And then we figured out they were like those Chinese lanterns that you light a candle and it goes up and then it goes out and it falls down.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Not that I felt dumb, but just that it's like, that's so disappointing.
There's always an explanation, I think, for UFOs. Even if it's not readily accessible, there's always some explanation. And New Hampshire is a historical site for UFOs, though.
And that's where it happened.
Yeah, and exactly.
That's where it started in a lot of ways, yeah.
Betty and Barney Hill.
Yeah, right. It was right up in that country. And when we were doing the Dawn of Freedom, it wasn't quite dawn yet, but it was still dark, and you could just start to see like the light coming over the mountains, but we were still in darkness. And out in the distance, I see this light like on the horizon, just like slowly moving. And I talk about it on the show for a minute. And then I was like, "Wow, what is it?" But I was also kind of in like loopy state because I had been up for like 21 hours at that point. And then the light came up and there was a road there where I saw the thing. So it was a car. But it appeared to be like when you can't see the mountains, it just looked like this light in the sky. Just like kind of hovering, but it was a car on a road.
Human mind is very creative.
Yeah.
And it likes to find patterns.
I want to believe.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to be abducted?
No. Well, I want to talk to somebody else who was first about, like, you know, if I want to go to like Mexico. I want to talk to somebody who's been there. Yeah. Besides Berwick.
Somebody real.
It's like, no, it will be fine. You'll have a good time. You just bring
$20. Everything costs $10. Yeah,
bring $20 and you will own many men. I'm really sorry. Anytime somebody says Jeff Berwick, I can't help but do this caricature I've created of him as this bad guy from a movie. Like a late 80s, early 90s action movie. Yeah, he'd probably antagonist. Like that.
Okay. Yeah, he'd probably appreciate it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd want to know what it's like. What are they probing for? How long is the probe? And I don't mean like, well, no, I'd want to know duration in time and length in inches.
Yeah.
Orifice? Yeah.
Exactly.
Is there pleasure involved? Yeah.
Yeah. Are they just taking a temperature? Yeah. I mean, because I could bring, you know, an oral thermometer if I know that that's what they're after. So, yeah, I talked to somebody first who did it. I kind of wonder what the phenomenon is with UFOs. Because there's a lot of believers.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stories that sort of get like repeated, like just similar stories where people don't know each other, but they tell a similar story. Not that that makes it true at all.
No, a lot of people say that's just a cultural narrative.
It's a cultural thing.
Yeah.
And now there's a whole hoaxing genre on YouTube of creating UFO videos, you know, using like CGI.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amateur CGI. Yeah. Some of them are really good.
Yeah, agreed.
And I helped this kid I tutored was obsessed with Ancient Aliens. This was like 2011. Uh-huh. And he was like 8 or 9. And he's like, I want to make a UFO hoax photo. I was like, all right. I don't know if you're helping your cause. I wish I still had this photo. We took a tray, like a silver serving tray. I took a camera out and pointed at the sky and like got down on a knee because he was like really small. Yeah. So I got down on a knee and I said, okay, stick the serving tray in the shot. And he just holds the serving tray up with his hand just out of the shot.
Yeah.
And I snapped the picture and then I just altered the lighting a little bit.
Yeah.
Totally real looking. No, it seems like a lot of it started with Roswell. And
yeah, when was Betty and Barney Hill were before Roswell, right?
No, they were after. They were in the 50s, yeah. I think, or 50s, or late 50s, early, or between the early 50s and the early 60s.
Yeah. There was that whole thing where they were like an interracial couple, right? Like one was black and one was white.
Mm-hmm. The man was black, yeah.
Yeah, and that was like a big deal at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, I remember reading some speculation that had something to do with it, but I don't know what the connection would be really.
Yeah, I'll...
Like they felt alienated? I don't know.
Yeah. That is funny, though. Hey, we were abducted by aliens. And the response is, oh, my God, an interracial couple.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't take you seriously about anything.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Right.
Like they have to create this... Well, I guess maybe the connection would be like Project Bluebeam. These silly humans are like worried about stupid things like race, you know, when we're all human beings. And if we took a perspective of like an alien, they would see like we're all humans. And doesn't matter like what color our skin is, and just these little differences are so insignificant to somebody who would be looking from the outside who doesn't have the cultural stuff about race.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet I ask you, is not an alien force already among us? What could be more alien to the universal aspirations of our peoples than war and the threat of war?
You sound like Ronald Reagan right now. Did you ever hear that speech?
Yeah, that was Project Bluebeam, right?
Where okay, so you said Project Bluebeam, and that puts you on a very short list. But
what list is that?
Why, for the people who don't know, what is Project Bluebeam?
So Project Bluebeam, the exact definition is shrouded in mystery. But the idea is that the U.S. government or whatever shadowy body at one point was going to fake the landing of aliens. And that's where the Ronald
like
Reagan speech.
Like an alien invasion,
like,
right?
Yeah, like an alien invasion. Day? Yeah. And that's where Reagan's speech comes in, because it was Reagan kind of getting everybody ready. Boy, if there was just an outside force coming down, you know, how quickly we'd realize we're all, you know, the same people and everything, and that it was an impetus to create a one world government.
Oh, when they give up on terrorism, I think that's what they're going to do.
Sure.
And, you know, there was, who was the German, Wernher von Braun? Mm-hmm. There was this woman who said that he told her that. Someday they are going to. Now, this is just hearsay, but it's interesting. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So
that'd be so easy to fake today.
Yeah, especially today. Yeah, so blue beam is in reference to holograms. So that's where kind of the whole idea comes from.
Good morning. My name is Carol Rosin. In 1974, after being a sixth grade school teacher, I was introduced to the late Dr. Wernher von Braun in the U.S., the father of rocketry. In my first meeting with him during that first 3.5 hours, he said to me, Carol, you will stop the weaponization of space. And I said, teachers don't stop until June. He said, no, you have to understand. This is February. And we have to prevent the weaponization of space because there is a lie being told to everyone that the weaponization of space is now first being based upon the evil empire, the Russians. There are many enemies, he said, against whom we're going to build this space-based weapon system, the first of whom was the Russians, which was existing at that time. Then there would be terrorists. Then there would be third world countries. Now we call them rogue nations or nations of concern. Then there would be asteroids. And then he would repeat to me over and over, and the last card, the last card, the last card would be the extraterrestrial threat. Well, at the time, I kind of laughed when he said asteroids, and when he said extraterrestrials, I knew I wasn't going to deal with that subject. And now we hear on the news just today, this week, that they've slid in another enemy. Only this time we're going to protect our satellites. In other words, we have to have some reason to spend these trillions, to waste these dollars on a space-based weapon system, and they're all lies. This is a system, he told me, that would never protect anyone. Even back then, he talked about suitcase bombs. He talked about chemical, viral, bacterial, biological warfare that these space-based weapons would never protect us against. And then he told me that, in fact, if you travel around the world, which I did after he died in 1977, I met with people in over 100 countries who were friends. They didn't want to build space-based weapons. I became a space and missile defense consultant, and I worked with people around the world. I became an advisor to the People's Republic of China. They don't want to build a space-based weapon system. And he told me back then that they didn't. He said, go to Russia. They're considered to be the enemy. I got on a plane by myself. When I got to Russia, I had a list of people that I had read out of the newspaper. Chernenko was in office then. He was the only one I didn't get a chance to meet. They introduced me to everyone when I got there. And when I got back, I said, oh, my Lord, this man is telling the truth. There is no threat. And I've been waiting until this day for 27 years, and I'm expecting the spin to happen, because he also explained to me that as a military strategist, as a person who worked on the MX missile, which I did later, he said, you will find that there is going to be a spin to find some enemy against whom we have to build space-based weapons. And now we should expect the spin, because he said part of the formula for the intelligence community is if they might have a weapon, then we have to consider that they do have these weapons. So now they do have these weapons. So now we have to build these weapon systems. And that's the formula, except that it's all based on a lie. And we have witnesses here today that have shown you that these extraterrestrial beings, that these craft that have come here are now not UFOs, they're identified flying objects. And we know that they have beings in them. And we have witnesses here who have told you that they can shut down our missile silos. They can stop a rocket going into space that's a test. We have witnesses here who have worked in the classified departments, who have the courage to come forward here to support what Wernher von Braun told me back in 1974 to 77. And I will testify before the Congress that when I founded the Institute for Security and Cooperation in Outer Space, which I shut down a few years ago because I didn't believe we had a chance with this huge, integrated around the world, complex weapon system, that we had any chance at all of transforming that war industry into a space industry that could provide benefits, like Dr. Greer has said, of global warming. We can end that situation of that problem. We can end the energy crisis. We can build now non-polluting technologies. Wernher von Braun used to tell me that we could have cars back then that drove around off the ground. He described this to me on beams, so that we have no pollution on this planet. And we can solve the problems of the people that are urgent and potential, and the other animals and the other cultures on Earth and in space. and we can end the arms race without dislocating the industry jobs, without disrupting the economy, by transforming, Wernher von Braun told me, the war industry into a global cooperative space industry that will provide, he said, finally, more jobs and profits on this planet than during any hot or cold wartime, more products and services that can be applied directly to solving the problems of this planet. And we can have a whole planet now that lives on in peace on Earth, with all the cultures on Earth, and with all the extraterrestrial cultures in space. And these are words that Wernher von Braun told me in 1974, and I will testify before the Congress under oath about everything I have said and more.
But yeah, a lot of people with von Braun, a lot of people have a lot of hearsay with him. Like there's other engineers who said that they've talked to him and they said, so, hey, where did we get all this technology all of a sudden? You know, the conversation would go like that. And von Braun would just kind of point up.
Yeah.
Say, up there, you know, and what did that mean? You know, and some people would say that they took it from, you know, they got it from aliens and all this stuff. And this is getting into, you know, that he was a Nazi and the Nazis were getting all their information from the Thule Society and all this business, you know,
and wanted to build a base on the moon.
Right.
Where the aliens lived.
Yeah. Or like
they had a time travel device.
Yeah. They had the Glocka, right. Which was the Bell. That's this spaceship or, you know, this time ship.
Oh, then they brought von Braun in and he's like, you know what you guys ought to do? Mid-1950s. Nuke the moon. We get their technology and then we nuke them.
You go back, nuke.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know if I'm taking this in a direction that...
don't even question. Don't even ask questions like that. Just go.
I actually don't think there's aliens. Like, I don't think...
In the universe?
Well, in the universe, yeah, there's some, right? But I don't think... Unless maybe they existed on Mars a long time ago or something to that effect, I don't think that I are there UFOs? Are there like advanced perhaps planes of some kind that have been in the sky at various points over various parts of the planet? Sure, I'm open to that. But as far as them being controlled by aliens or as far as aliens visiting Earth and all this stuff, I think it's my opinion, hogwash. You know, I don't buy it. In fact, like, there's a show, Ancient Aliens, that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I think they do a grave disservice to a lot of genuine issues in archaeology by just immediately running to saying it's aliens.
I also think they do a disservice to just human ingenuity in general.
Sure.
Like, a theme that comes up in that show a lot is like, oh, those idiot ancient humans, they were too dumb. They couldn't have done this. When, no, like, we have the same equipment as them as far as our brain goes. We've got the same genetics. We've got the same, I mean, in some ways, their nutrition was maybe even a little better than ours.
Sure.
They've got all the capacity to innovate and invent new things and figure out, like, math and technology and science and medicine. Like, it's amazing how advanced the ancient Egyptians were at chemistry and architecture and... like Greeks and Romans, like just there were all these civilizations that did amazing feats of human ingenuity. And it's a disservice to say, oh, it must have been aliens because humans couldn't have done that. And it's not giving them credit for being like the same kind of human that we are.
But, and then there's this interesting question that was raised on this show a long time ago. Was there a mass incentive for people to innovate like that or not? And it seemed like, and I forget who it was. Was it Higgs? Or no, there's a book called Man Makes Himself. I forget who the author is. I'll put it in the show notes, though. And it talks about how there was this way from the agricultural revolution up until the rise of Egypt, there was this massive wave of innovation in labor-saving devices. And then once these empires kind of grabbed hold on civilization in the Middle East and North Africa, innovation seems to slow way down because people were enslaved, you know. So a lot of people had no incentive to be innovative, or people were in charge, you know, in this apparatus of the state and had no incentive to be innovative because they had slaves. So labor-saving innovations actually almost grind to a halt from the rise of pretty much the whole Egyptian dynasty.
Right.
And now there's a lot of theory here, but most of those things came before, which also kind of fits with our idea of advancements that don't fit into the chronology of history.
Right.
Because everything kind of starts in, what, Sumeria? That's pretty much the agreed upon beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Of settled civilization.
Yeah, in fact, like, and oddly enough, it just comes out of nowhere, right? Like, suddenly they can just write. You know, you can't find anything beforehand, but suddenly there's cuneiform. They have a complete uniform language. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, strangest damn thing.
Well, maybe they threw away their rough drafts.
Yeah, right. Of course they did.
Right.
Do we want to talk about the, like, Sumerian origin stories, like, as translated by Sitchin? You know,
I'll,
like,
go wherever we want to go.
Go okay. There. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like, there's some interesting, like, the whole thing about the genetic engineering of the humans and...
Yeah, Brett kind of mentioned that a little bit earlier in that... you know, that humans were genetically engineered to mine for gold, right? And there's gold mines that seem to go back maybe 100,000 years, 150,000 years, something like that.
And they needed gold. There's a planet that swings. Okay, so this, I'm not saying I believe this.
But oh, the planet, this planet that swings in.
Yeah, Planet Nibiru. X, yes. Or Nibiru. Yeah.
Nibiru. Oh, shit. Here we go. Yeah, go ahead.
Nibiru. And so it swings around. It has an irregular orbit, and it swings around into, like, the orbit of Earth every, what is it, like 3,000 years?
It's like 3,300 years, yeah.
Okay, so every 3,300 years. And there's a race of advanced life forms that lives on this planet. And they are
the Anunnaki,
and they have advanced technology, but their atmosphere is fucked up and failing, and they need gold to, like, save their atmosphere, like, by putting gold flakes in the atmosphere, which I guess, like, Al Gore actually suggested for, like,
Cass Sunstein actually
suggested
it as a way to save the environment would be to launch, like, gold reflective flakes into the atmosphere. And that was interesting because, you know, Sitchin wrote about it in the 60s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they need gold to save their atmosphere, but they don't have enough gold on their planet. So they go to Earth. When they swing around, they go to Earth, they find humans.
Originally they mine it.
Oh, originally they mine it.
Yeah, the Anunnaki mine it.
They realize that there's, like, lower humans, like, living on the planet, and that they're maybe, like, primates or monkeys or, like, Homo erectus or something.
Homo erectus, yeah.
Yeah, not quite Homo sapiens. So they take the DNA of Homo erectus and they add in genes, and they take out genes. And some of the things that they add in are, like, intelligence, like, enough to be slaves, like, to do tasks, but not so much that they would maybe, like, get uppity and rise up. They're basically, like, trying to create ideal kind of, like, slave workers, and they go through some prototypes and they take away genes for longevity.
Well, so originally they give it to them.
Oh, originally they give it to them, and then they take it away. Okay.
And which is supposed to explain why in the Bible you have characters like Methuselah who live 900 years and all of this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then at some point they realize, like, oh, we released, like, a bad version into the environment, and they flood the planet to get rid of them. And that's the flood.
Yeah, that's the great flood is Enlil wiping out
So there's Anunnaki,
creation.
There's, like, two brothers, right?
Enki, yeah, Enlil and Enki.
Uh-huh, and...
That's how far this goes. It just
and
gets,
like,
wilder.
One of them, which one takes pity on the humans, or, like, the
Enki.
Okay. So they create, yeah, Enlil wants to wipe all the humans out. Enki takes pity on them and, like, saves a few of them or something.
Right.
And the Sumerians write about the Anunnaki as gods, but they're not really gods. They're just advanced aliens. And they depict them with wings because they're able to fly. And they have, like, spaceships and stuff. I think I'm missing some stuff in there. Oh, yeah. Sitchin said that he predicted that Neptune is blue, right?
Oh, so, yeah. Sitchin made a bunch of predictions, some of which have been, you know, seemingly accurate, others which have fallen off. But, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good example of the theory behind the creation myths of, you know, the Sumerians.
And he supposedly got all this from translating cuneiform writings, which nobody had really been doing up to that point, I guess.
There were a few people on Earth who could translate cuneiform.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of people, and they've claimed to have debunked everything that he said.
Yeah. He had mistranslations.
I wanted this to be the plot of Star Wars Episode 7.
I know, right?
That's such a good story.
This is how Earth started?
I made a video about it. Did you guys ever see the video?
No.
Oh, I'll show you after.
All right. That's, yeah.
I really enjoyed making it. And yeah. But instead of these two, who are these people?
Enlil and Enki.
Yeah, it was Han and Chewie. And Luke and Princess Leia.
We all know what Chewie is, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I don't know. I like that. I mean, all you see why these things are so attractive.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
but let me. Or
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, I've actually, you know, I've studied Sitchin's work quite a bit.
Yeah.
I still like any. He died a few years ago, unfortunately. Some people would say fortunately, I guess, but he like posthumously, a lot of his stuff still gets released, and I read it. I mean, I take it, you know, I take it with a grain of salt. But anyway, there's the word Nibiru. There's other words in Sumerian that are very close to that that don't necessarily mean that it was like another planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I've often wondered, you know, just having fun with the idea, nothing more than that, is just having fun, because I mean, you know, how do you prove this stuff? Is that maybe he meant like not Nibiru, but there's the word Nibur, and that actually just means far away. And so what if it was people that came to the Sumerians that were just from a faraway land?
And they were maybe more advanced.
Yeah, and they were like an advanced civilization. I mean, not getting into like Atlantis or anything like that. But yeah, I really have the bias in any of these kind of, you know, conversations and stories and theories that get laid out. Again, I just, you know, the laws of physics, I don't see aliens as possibly coming to Earth. I just don't. I also think, I mean, you take things like the Fermi paradox. I don't think there's many alien, you know, many sapient, not sentient, but actually sapient, you know, alien species in the entire universe.
Well, that's no fun.
Well, but there it is.
But I mean, wouldn't the odds be that there were thousands or millions?
Right. So you got the Drake equation, which says that there should be like millions of, there should be life everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that the Drake equation doesn't consider is, what are the odds for a amoeba becoming a human? Like, what's the math behind that happening? Because there's no guarantee that that's supposed to happen. So there are mathematical odds against it. And I'm sure those mathematical odds are at least in the millions.
Yeah.
Against it. And so with the Drake equation saying, okay, well, there's got to be this many planets within a Goldilocks zone, or even now they kind of theorize that it could be around a like a dwarf star, and it doesn't have to be in the Goldilocks zone. It could be closer because of that. But, you know, without considering just how much chance it takes for a creature to become intelligent like we are, you know, that's why I use the word sapient,
right,
instead of sentient. Yeah. I think those numbers blow away the Drake equation to where the Drake equation just doesn't add up. I think it might stand against it that the odds are actually greater. That, I mean, I'm open to there being tons of like animal life all over the place. That I'm totally open to that. But as far as like another creature that could, say, communicate, you know, like we do, I don't know. I mean, and that's what the Fermi paradox is all about. The Fermi paradox is that, okay, if the Drake equation says there's supposed to be all this life out there, why aren't we getting any signs of it? You know, and so my answer to that is just because, and it's not my own, you know, it's not just mine, but to a lot of people, is that they're just not there. There's other theories, great filter, all this stuff, but.
Well, I guess the way that I've thought about it is, how many different ways does a star system form,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you have to think, like, the closest star to ours is like 4 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know?
Centauri.
So can a solar system, I mean, we look at the stars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we say, okay, this is a red dwarf. Like, a star has a life cycle.
Right.
How many stars are in, you know, out there that are about the same age as the sun, you know, which is what, 4...
Yeah,
billion.
4 billion.
No, the sun is older.
Yeah, the Earth is 4 billion.
So
old.
Maybe the sun is. I don't think the sun is much older though.
Right. A few billion.
That would make sense. So how many stars are at that phase in their lives right now?
Right.
And then once you answer that question, which I mean, you could answer it locally, what you can see in near space.
Sure.
Even let's say in near space, there's, I'm just picking a number completely arbitrarily here, 100. If you could look at what the solar systems are around those stars,
mm-hmm.
then you could probably be able to calculate much more realistically.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the conversation will advance more quickly, maybe within the next 5 years, if they do go to, what's the Jupiter moon, Europa.
Oh yeah,
they want to go. They've been talking about this, I think, for about 15 years. They want to go to Europa and drill.
Mm.
And what they find, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, there's liquid oceans underneath.
There's some kind of liquid.
Some liquid.
Because they can see the ice, whatever this ice surface is, move.
Right.
So there's something underneath it. Now it could just be some kind of weird gel. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if it's water, I mean, imagine if it's water.
Yeah, there's great potential for there to be life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'm open to that.
I'm really hoping for like a Snorks kind of situation.
Yeah, come along with the Snorks. That'd be amazing. Where's Astro? That was the lead Snork. Anyway,
with the Snorks.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wait, they lived in water, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And
they I thought maybe I was confusing them with sea monkeys.
No, you're good.
All right.
But, you know, again, so I'm open to there being some kind of animal life, you know, on Europa.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not
sapient. Exactly.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying. I think the conversation could take off because then that answers the question. I mean, what'd you find? Some bacteria on Mars? I don't even know if they did or not. They thought they might have.
Yeah. There's
it wasn't really ever conclusively
Or there
shown.
Was a meteor that came, that landed in, I think, Antarctica.
Yeah.
That they claimed there's like a little worm, little guy on there that might be extraterrestrial life, you know.
I think panspermia is a real thing, like a comet that had carrying bacteria that just seeded a bunch of different planets with it or something. And there's bacteria that actually exist like up really high in the atmosphere, higher than anyone thought that they could. Yeah, I mean, life finds a way, like Jurassic Park, right? Life is really good at that. But how far like away is other life in other solar systems, and like how long would it take to get there? Is that the great filter?
The
great filter is civilizations destroying themselves.
Yeah,
right?
The great filter is that, civilizations or, advanced species destroy themselves before they get to the point where there would be signs of them in the universe.
Yeah.
I'm open to some degree of panspermia. I mean, I even made, how much credence I give to this idea. I even made a game called Hypercronius, and it's all about humans actually originating on Mars instead of on Earth. So, I'm open to like these wild ideas. I'm open to them. That doesn't mean that there's any one that I consider to be like the theory that's true.
What about, can we go to some of the biblical things that are explained by like ancient alien theorists, like that Noah's Ark was actually like a genetic, DNA bank, the giants, the Nephilim.
The Nephilim. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, where it talks about that. And a really famous verse, kind of famous, infamous, I guess, because a lot of people just want to ignore it. The Bible, of course, has tons of verses that people just want to completely ignore that don't really gel with the overall story. And that's one of them, where it talks about the Nephilim. And yeah, I mean, what to talk about them? Like, I mean, the Nazis supposedly based half their ideology on them. That they were like, that the blonde-haired, blue-eyed,
the
super race is descended from these giants that were a mixture of, fallen angels and human women, having sex, in all of this. I mean, yeah, there's people who see some credence to that. It's a weird verse. It just kind of comes out of nowhere. What I think it really shows, though, isn't that like somehow aliens came down or something along those lines. I think it shows where the Bible, where Judaism particularly, there's a theory called Pan-Babylonianism. And that is that Judaism took a ton of stuff from other religions around the world that already existed. Or when the Jews were in Babylonian captivity, they took their, they took Babylonian ideas like the Nephilim and all that. And just, put them into their book. Mm-hmm. Some of these have actually really good explanations. Now, where did the Babylonians get it from? Okay, fine. Yeah, that's another story. But it's like, as far as what does it mean in the Bible? Well, it's probably, borrowed stuff. I mean, that's the deal with that.
Right. What about the Book of Enoch?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the Book of Enoch is actually recognized by the church, by Christian churches in Ethiopia.
For folks who don't know, like the Bible is determined what books were going to go in it by committee, right? Like there's other books that could have gone in the Bible that didn't make it, and those are the apocryphal texts.
Yeah, so there was the Council of Nicaea was third, fourth century, around there, where they were deciding, okay, these books are the books, that exist within the Bible, because some of this other stuff is just far too weird. And the Book of Enoch is one of those ones that was considered far too weird. The problem is it's not really a Christian text, because in the Dead Sea Scrolls, you find the Book of Enoch. So that means that, at some point, Judaism recognized it. The Israelites would have seemed to have recognized it. And it gets into some strange places. Like, I mean, you read it, and it does. It reads like science fiction. It's a very strange book. It gives some explanation as to what these Nephilim might be. A lot of people, there's points in it, in the Book of Enoch, that seem to predict the coming of Christ and the death of Christ. Mm. So that's why a lot of people thought, okay, this can't really be, like, legit, because it's guessing too good. you know, that like that's not really possible.
Doesn't it say like he got taken up into like a spaceship and he got to know like,
well, it says he was specific, taken to heaven.
Oh, and then he got to know like angels by their name and like they had jobs and they had personalities and.
Yes. Yeah. He describes like this whole hierarchy in heaven and all this stuff. And, you know, actually that kind of leads to one of the interesting points about a lot of these theories is that these aliens are these really advanced species. All of them are like kings and queens and they all have, there's hierarchy and all this stuff.
Why is there so much hierarchy if they're so advanced?
If they're so advanced, why aren't they anarchists? Mm-hmm. Like that never made any, you know, any real sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, as far as that goes. So yeah, that's another reason I don't buy a lot of these alien theories is that the aliens always seem to have a ton of human projection upon them as far as, you know, what they're like. And so who knows what they're actually like. Mm-hmm. You know, on the flip side, I mean, one could make the conversation of like Greek gods, you know, don't they act very human? Well, maybe it's because that's exactly what they were, is they were just humans, maybe advanced humans or something. I mean, you could go forever with this stuff.
Yeah. So lots of maybes.
Lots of maybes, big time maybes. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't affect like anything from my life. I just think it's kind of funny.
That's the thing. It's fun. It's fun. And then I think that's important with a lot of these, you know, there's conspiracy theories maybe that are important to know about, like, I think learning about the NSA and what they're doing, you know, things of that nature, like how you can have your privacy and whatever, you know,
that's another one that I don't even know like what to do about it.
Sure. But you know, those are worth kind of, you know, those are worth doing something about perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, when you find out about them. I mean, and the world reacted to when Edward Snowden said stuff, but a lot of these other stuff, you know, a lot of these other theories, I don't see how they affect your life, and you know, just treat them for what they are. You know, they're fun to explore. They make the world, you know, kind of exciting to consider and all that. And I think in that way they have not necessarily validity, but there's a purpose to studying them, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, I mean, you can see how far, you know, and how intertangled and interweaved and all this stuff can be. It's my thoughts on it.
Describe this purpose, just in like as we draw to a close here.
Sure.
The purpose.
The purpose of studying.
The utility, maybe, of studying these things.
Nothing more than, well, okay, so like in what I study, you know, with some of the religious stuff, I'm intrigued to actually know, like, really where did, because it doesn't make any sense to me where religion started from. Like, I think humans, you know, early humans, ancient humans, Paleolithic humans, whatever you want to say, they relied so much upon reality and their senses to survive. Like, it was just absolutely key that how they could take such a leap outside of logic by believing in the supernatural, you know, even to the point of like animism, it blows my mind. I really had to
understand so much about nature.
Yeah.
You're saying, like, about biology, about reproduction, about life and death, about how to hunt animals, about how animals reproduce, about how humans reproduce.
Right. Because
the sun, the days, the environment. Yeah, like everything.
Yeah.
They really had to be in touch with reality and nature. And yeah, supernaturalism, like where and why does that fit in?
Yeah, so because if they believe like in animism, which is supposedly the first religion, if they believe that everything was alive and everything had a spirit within it, you'd think they'd be terrified because they know themselves what pain feels like. You think they'd be terrified to break a stick.
Yeah.
But we know that they broke sticks to make tools and do whatever else. It doesn't gel for me where the very first kind of religion came from. So I think there's some utility in learning about that. But as far as, you know, a lot of this other fanciful stuff, I think it makes the world exciting because, you know, there's an excitement in not having all the answers. There's an excitement and a fear that exists within the unknown. And you can approach the unknown in a couple different ways. You know, one is with excitement, the other is with fear. You know, so I think in learning about them, you know, don't let them take over your life. But in learning about them, I think it can raise a lot of questions and bring a lot of abstract thought. And abstract thought is one of the beautiful things that humans have. That's how we have, I think, how we have a lot of things we have today that really make life enjoyable. So, you know, if it can bring questions, if it can get you thinking, yeah, sure, go for it.
Doesn't really jive with what you were just saying, but while you were talking there, for some reason, the movie Memento came to mind.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I've never seen that one.
Oh my God. I don't want to spoil it for you. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. It's like a movie that it should be spoilable because it's 15 years old at this point, but it's so good. You have to see it. It's like one of Christopher Nolan's first movies. Mm-hmm. And God, what a brilliant movie.
Yeah, yeah. It was good.
How can I tell the story without spoiling it? I have to think. I just have to think about how to do this. fuck.
There's no way to do it.
I don't want to try for it.
What?
I don't want to try for it. So
maybe this, if you see it at some point in the future, this won't affect it. But he's kind of going through this ritual of making meaning, mm-hmm. right? So this whole study is kind of, in some ways, maybe for some people, you know, I think it's safer once you get to that point of acceptance that we talked yes. about earlier.
Yeah.
But something like JFK or 9/11 or the Apollo missions, it's a black hole
yep.
that you can just keep falling into
yeah.
and keep finding new things and keep making a new mystery
right.
that's increasingly harder to solve, you know, but it's like meaning through some kind of mission.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not even saying that somebody is doing that fool themselves or
disassociate.
Yeah, because having a mission does give you meaning, you know, and I think that a lot of people do this as a kind of they see it as a kind of mission, you know, but understanding, I mean, this goes back to the NVC thing. Why am I here and what am I trying to do? What do I need? What do I want? Mm-hmm. Maybe all of that energy could be better directed.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And if the energy is better directed or more appropriately focused on, I don't know, for me, getting away from like hours on end, I'm not saying that like I could be watching a video on YouTube and something new comes up about Building 7 and the Suggesteds. I'll free up a half an hour. What do you got? What's new in this world? You know, but that kind of endless investigation replaced by self-exploration, mm-hmm. I think, for me, has been not a continue. I mean, I haven't really nailed it. I haven't been perfect about it, but it's been a better use of time. And then going back to this stuff for as a kind of intellectual exercise, mm-hmm. and I mean that as like exercise, a training
right.
like in thinking and right. discovering and removing contradictions and making right. connections, it's a fun kind of learning. It can be.
I agree.
You yeah, know?
Absolutely.
Because like we said so much earlier in this conversation, there is a lot of truth to uncover.
Yeah.
In a lot of these things that are just written off as soon as the word conspiracy is thrown out there.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions. Doesn't mean you're going to find the answers, but it's interesting to see the questions too.
Absolutely. So in conclusion, George H.W. Bush killed JFK.
And you're all a bunch of sheeple.
That's right.
Good night.
Hail the Illuminati.
So we never did. We never did talk about the Bush JFK.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
There is there's a couple like loose pieces of evidence that George Bush was in Dallas when JFK was killed, but mm-hmm. he says he doesn't remember. There's like very interesting people who were asked about the JFK assassination who were adults at that point and should remember where they were, but they've all given like Richard Nixon, George Bush, say they can't recall where they were when they heard JFK was killed. There's a letter that came from the FBI that talks about a man named George Bush of the CIA. So that George Bush was actually in the CIA mm-hmm. at the time. Now, because George Bush became the director of the CIA,
yeah.
And the at least the facade was that George Bush is a, you know, a young politician with a good from a good family who's here to clean up this corrupt organization mm-hmm. when he took it over, like in the mid 1970s. Mm-hmm. But there's a theory that he was actually in the CIA. And that the CIA had these connections to, you know, the oil industry in mm-hmm. Texas. And there was a lot of back and forth between those two groups. There's also supposedly a picture of George Bush standing outside. Now, a part of it is a want to believe that it's him. But there is a man in 1963 standing outside the Book Depository building after the assassination of JFK. And a group of other men that does resemble George Bush in his physique, in his hairline, in the way that he stands, in the way he has his hand in his pocket mm-hmm. of his coat. There's actually been a fair amount of scholarship on this subject from new angles. People always say it was the Cubans, it was the mafia, it was the mm-hmm. CIA. But there's also this real neglected Texas connection to the assassination. Now, the assassination took place in Texas. the one of the people with the greatest motives to see Kennedy dead was well-connected in Texas, Lyndon Johnson. Mm-hmm. So there's a very interesting story that George H.W. Bush does fit into. Now, I won't go as far as JFK 2, where somebody says, because George H.W. Bush killed JFK, clearly, George W. Bush
killed Jr.
Killed JFK Jr. And there's a documentary about that. But I won't go that far. But I'll take it to the first one. Maybe is that as far as does that mean dabbling further than the moon landing?
That's pretty far.
But then there's also this clip. Now this is all circumstantial, but then there's this clip of George Bush talking about the Kennedy assassination, right? And he says, "And a deluded gunman," and then he giggles.
Weird.
Wow.
That's weird.
I'll show you here while we're still streaming. Yeah. I'm going to show you. All right, what was the first one? The letter. Let me pull up Firefox. Sorry, we're really taxing the shit out of the computer here, but this just might take a minute to get all this stuff up.
You know, while you're looking this up, mm-hmm. if you want, I could share who I think actually pulled the trigger.
Yeah, do it. I'm curious
about
JFK.
And, you know, you talk about motivations, and I say this only half in jest, because I think this is actually pretty plausible, but Marilyn Monroe. Like, it was a crime of passion straight up. There's a few people that have claimed that. I wasn't the first one to think of it. Actually, Harlan Ellison was the first person to mention it. And, you know?
Yeah. They say the person who's most likely to kill you is the person you're doing it with.
But how would she do that? She'd have to be like a sharpshooter.
Well, that's where MKUltra comes in.
Oh,
her assassin,
yeah. See, because she would have that gamma personality prototype. That's the assassin, right? She's the prototype, because that's the other thing in MKUltra, is that every woman eventually has to pay homage to Marilyn Monroe. Like, and everybody, even if they're black, they get dressed up as Marilyn Monroe at some point. Yeah. So anyway, that's a little side theory out there, but I'm intrigued to see this the letter and whatever else we got here.
Yeah, poor Marilyn Monroe. I don't know much about her, but I mean, clearly she was really unhappy. Like, something was really,
oh,
really
sure.
bothering her.
Well, I mean, she was bisexual. I mean, there was so much going on for her. Like, she was in love with Shelley Winters. I mean, you know, and you're in a society that just doesn't allow for any of that. No. And who knows what she had to do at the Oval Office. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very, very sad. Aww. You know, if there's ever impetus to create a multiple personality disorder in someone, she would certainly fit that bill.
Jeez, I can't believe how quickly I found all this shit.
We won't let that hold that against you. Yeah.
Actually, Brian, I wanted to ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
I know at one point, like, the biblical stuff, like the religious Christian stuff held a lot of sway for you.
Sure. Yeah, and I was very religious.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, questioning it by exploring some of these alternative theories, like, gave it less power in your mind, or like less certainty that it was true.
Yeah, I think it was part of the deconstruction process. Yeah. Certainly. After a deluded gunman. Here we go.
This is probably going to be one of those. It's only 11 seconds, but it's probably going to be the thing where they slow it down and repeat it.
After a deluded gunman assassinated President Kennedy. After a deluded gunman assassinated President Kennedy.
All right, so that's one. All right, we get it. You're an old creep. All right, now this is FBI memo, Link Bush Sr. to Dallas, to Director Bureau of Intelligence and Research, Department of State, from John Edgar Hoover, Director FBI.
What's the date on it?
Subject, November 29th, 1963. Subject, assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Our Miami, Florida office on November 23rd advised that the Office of the Coordinator of Cuban Affairs in Miami advised that the Department of State feels some misguided anti-Castro group might capitalize on the present situation and undertake an unauthorized raid against Cuba, believing that the assassination of President John F. Kennedy might herald a change in U.S. policy, which is not true. An informant who has furnished reliable information in the past and who is close to a small pro-Castro group in Miami has advised that these individuals are afraid that the assassination of the president may result in strong repressive measures being taken against them, and although pro-Castro in their feelings, regret the assassination. The substance of the foregoing information was orally furnished by Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency and Captain William, can't make out the name, of the Defense Intelligence Agency on November 23rd, 1963, by Mr. V.T. Forsyth of this bureau. Then there's the picture. All right, this might be the best we're going to do.
Yeah, it kind of looks like from a distance, the one on the left there looks like Jeb.
Yeah, I mean, it's not convincing, but similar chin, similar nose.
Yeah.
I'd say the hairline is very similar. You can't see his ear. If this is really like that compelling of a picture, you think there would have been more enhancements of it. So they're standing right here. It's Texas School Book Depository. I mean, who the fuck knows? This could be a totally fake image, you know? All right, here's there was one where he's standing with Nixon, or it's more convincing, but
I've seen some photos that I don't know, just people claim are like smoking guns, like with the big red arrows and all that stuff. And I'm just like, no, that's not good enough.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different conspiracies, though. I forget which exactly. I've seen like Bigfoot pictures like that, where it's just like a blur on the screen.
Bigfoot smoking guns.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's not a smoking gun.
I don't know what happened.
What about Bigfoot? Do you think there's a North American primate? Or maybe in the Asian continent?
As far as a conspiracy is concerned, no, I would say no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm open to the Yeti, not Bigfoot, mm-hmm. but the Yeti, I think, it's documented, not necessarily obviously photographs, but it's documented just a little too much.
Yeah.
You know.
In what way?
Oh, just in writings and, you know, historical accounts and things like that. I mean, that'd be the Asian continent. So, and it's important to remember, like, you know, and like there's the elephant bird, like the elephant bird was this, you know, like 6-8 foot tall bird. Mm-hmm. I mean, these, you know, and it was in the 1860s that they saw the last one. So it's mm-hmm. not like, you know, big animals, you know, have been around. Of course, that's sure. all gets into cryptozoology. Anyway.
I think there would be bones too.
Yeah.
For Sasquatch. Like there's never been, I know there's been like people have claimed to find Yeti bones, like the femur mm-hmm. of a Yeti. And obviously there have been claimed to be footprints in North America, but. I would think there'd be bones in North America.
Sure.
I think that means we've come to the end.
I think that's what it means.
Some of that can be after show. All right, yeah, let's wrap this up. So, guys, thank you so much. I hope you'll take a chance to plug your websites here.
Sure, absolutely. Stephanie, you want to go first?
Sure, yeah. Thanks, Brett. This was fun.
Thanks for having me on.
It was nice to hang out with you guys. I am a voice actor. My website is smvoice.info, and you can see all my audiobooks, my videos, and get in touch with me if you have a voice project where I could help bring your audio project to life. And I also...
I like the face you make when you say that.
Well, it's kind of like a tagline that I've been using.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, it sounds a little corny, but the reason I was laughing is because I felt a little silly saying it, but like, that's what I like to think of as what I do with my work is try to bring a script to life.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody's not just reading it like a robot. They're like really expressing the ideas that are in it. So that's what I think of as my work is doing. And then one more time, that's smvoice.info. And yeah, I guess I'll stop there because I haven't been too active at podcasting lately.
All right. Brian?
Sure, yeah. So again, I also appreciate being on. This is a real honor and love to have you on my show, which is Sovereign Tech. And if anyone wants to find out more about that, you can actually go to zog.ninja. Yes, that is zog.ninja.
That was totally on purpose. And
that is absolutely on purpose. What it actually stands for is my game company, which is Zomia Offline Games. And I have my very first video game came out recently. So, and people can check that out and grab a copy if they want. It's called Hypercronius. But everything I do, I have a bunch of different projects. Everything I do is at zog.ninja. I love saying it.
How do you get .ninja?
Yeah, it's one of the new top-level domains. Yeah.
You could get like bertvernert.ninja.
Well,
bartlafart.ninja.
There was some talk a couple of years ago of top-level.sucks.
Yeah. Oh man, that would have been perfect.
Yeah. Now, yeah. I'm sure school would be one of the first ones to get scooped up, but I might look into that.
Well, you never know because, like, I grabbed ZomiaOfflineGames.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to that website too. It all goes to the same place. But I thought, because when I got the Dot Ninjas came out, I bought whatever one I wanted because I love ninjas. And I didn't think there'd be a three letter left. Like, the three-letter ones just go like hotcakes every single time. But there it was, ZOG.ninja was available. It's like, oh, fantastic, Zionist occupied government. I mean, Zomi Offline Games, you know, .ninja, and there, or, you know, Zog.ninja.
Awesome.
Yeah, so you might get sucks.
I'm going to check that out.
Oh, and by the way, I have to say about Brian's website, like there's so much cool content there. And I live with him, so I see him every day, like working on his website. He puts up blog posts about how to secure your phone. He does a show, a podcast every week, Sovereign Tech, which is amazing. And he's got a lot of devoted fans. And he puts up movie reviews sometimes.
When nice.
We see movies.
Yeah, and I have daily content.
Daily content updated every day. So there's like tons of ways to keep in touch with him, and he's designing games, and his first game, Hypercronus, is out, like you said, about humans like coming from Mars. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool game. It features some voiceovers from me, actually.
And some very interesting voiceovers from
me. Some sexy moaning, but also some straight up narration.
Yeah.
And yeah, we had fun really like making that, producing it kind of together, but most of the game was obviously Brian's doing. And I thought it was a really fun game, so I definitely recommend to check it out.
Very cool. Well, thanks again, guys, and we will have to do this in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right on.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.